Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson! Wherever you are listening from, this is Rated LGBT Radio, and coincidentally, I am your host, Rob Watson. Very excited to be here tonight, and I'm looking forward to our special guest, Brody Rae, who is an up-and-coming country western singer. I've seen one episode of America's Got Talent where he slayed the four judges, standing ovation. His audition was very reminiscent of a good friend of mine who I've interviewed several times, Julia Scotty, who is a brilliant stand-up comedian, who also slayed on America's Got Talent. And both of them completely blew the audience and the judges away when they revealed that they were each transgender. And quite frankly, with both of them, had they not mentioned that fact, nobody would have known that was part of their history. So we're waiting for Brody Rae to call in and can't wait to find out about his path, his experience, his music, and what is going on in his world. I want to bring on another Brody right now. Good friend, brilliant journalist, Brody Levesque. Good evening, Brody.
Good evening. And boy, is tonight going to get a little confusing. I have to be honest
I know,
with you.
I have to say Brody 1 and Brody 2, or Country Brody and News Brody, or we'll figure it out. I'm sure we'll sort it out.
We're going to have to define it out, yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the news. The news, of course, has been kind of grim, to say the very least. The first thing I want to talk about was today marks the 10th anniversary of the death in Liverpool, England, of an 18-year-old gay man who was a hairdresser. He had gone to a party, and he encountered some pretty ugly homophobia, and he was attacked by some members of the crowd at the party. They punched him, they kicked him, then they took a hardback book and they beat him so badly with it that it actually broke his spine. And he had multiple facial fractures, massive head injuries, and then to add insult to injury, they took him out and literally dumped him in the street, and then he was picked up and taken to hospital. And he died about a week later. Now, reminiscent of what Judy and Dennis Shepherd did with the murder of their son, Matthew, Michael Crosby's parents set up a foundation in his name that raises awareness on bullying and on gay hate and some of the problems that go with the different issues, not only in their native Liverpool, but the entire rest of the UK, and they've been really actually quite effective. And it's very difficult. I had interviewed them a couple of months after their son had passed away, and we talked a little bit at that time. It again, here's a case where, like the Shepherds and like the Clementes. And some of the other amazing parents that I've met over the years as a journalist, they take something that's just so completely terrible and awful that would render most people, quite frankly, useless. And they've turned it all around and they've done something with it. And they've used the death of their children as something to empower others and to prevent it happening from other people. So my hearts go out to Michael Causer's parents, and for our UK listeners, and I know we have you guys over there in the UK, you would look up the Michael Causer Foundation on Facebook and send them a donation. That would be greatly appreciated.
I just have to say before you move on, Brody, I just have to say I'm totally astounded by those parents. I cannot imagine losing either one of my two sons, and the idea of it is absolutely devastating. To rise up from that, to focus on a greater good and create the causes that they have and put the energy into it and the purpose behind it is just astronomical to me. It just blows my mind that they have the strength and love and power to do that. So I too want to echo what you said, sending love and gratitude out for them, and as well as sorrow for what must be an ongoing pain, even these many years later.
Absolutely. It's interesting to me that out of the depths of some of the greatest tragedies, and you and I've talked to numerous individuals that have just, cast that completely aside and pressed forward. A mutual friend of ours, gun reform activist Brandon Wolf from Florida, who was a survivor of the Pulse nightclub shooting. Yet it takes a special type of person, Ron, I think, to be able to take tragedy and literally turn it into lemonade. And I am in awe of the Cowsers, of the Shepherds, of the Clementes, of Brandon, and the other Pulse survivors, especially the ones that founded the Drew Project in the name of one of the kids that was killed at Pulse. Yeah, it's amazing. And I think it really speaks to a greater good that's there that oftentimes people don't realize. I just think it's kind of tragic that it seems often that the only way we learn these lessons is this way. So
right.
Let's go to Michigan.
Agreed.
We had a case that has been working through the Michigan courts for a while now. There's a health club there that's known as Planet Fitness, and a patron had gotten upset because there was a transgender woman in the woman's locker room of this particular Planet Fitness, and she ran to the front counter and complained to the management, and then she was telling other customers, there's a man in the men's girls' room, blah, 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 which caused the gym to cancel her membership for inappropriate disruptive behavior. Well, she turned around and she sued him for $25,000 in damages, and then saying she was suffering violations of privacy, embarrassment, humiliation, emotional distress. And as we've talked about this many, many times before, she completely parlayed this into what my trans activist friends refer to as the X factor, and then made a legal case out of it. She was represented in court by a notorious anti-gay law firm, the Thomas More Center. There's basically three legal firms in the United States that really seriously hate the LGBTQ community: the Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, and the Thomas More Center, which is based in Detroit. Anyway, so it worked its way up, and at first the lower court, and these are state courts, ruled against her. And then the State Court of Appeals also said that, she hadn't suffered an intrusion of privacy and blah, blah, blah. But then the High Court of Michigan revived the case, and it sent it back to the lower courts to examine a legal question that hadn't been considered. But when the panel found that Planet Fitness had violated its own contract with this woman, it was basing it on the fact that the ruling required a foundation of transphobia. And essentially what this does is that the Michigan High Court and then the appellate court have concluded that trans women aren't women. So we get into the testicle and ovaries argument with this one in a very legal way. And the reason this is bad is because this will kind of open up even more avenues for discrimination. Now, this isn't the final run on this case. What will happen now is the case is going to go back to the lower court. They're probably going to have to go through it again. Now, her attorney's hoping that they're going to have to go through it without a trial, but in speaking to Lambda Legal and some of the folks at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, NCLR, and some of the others that advocate strongly for the LGBTQI community, that a victory would require, okay, the lower court to agree to erase the validity of transgender identities. And I'm quoting my friend Zach Ford, the editor and reporter for St. Progress LGBT. I would not be comfortable thinking that a court could go there, but in this day and age, it's entirely possible. And as we look at some of the rulings that have come off of these more conservative state courts, it's entirely possible that we could see that happening. That's about it for the news.
So, Brody, let me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go over what you just described and make sure that both myself and our listeners understand the ramifications of that. So basically what is happening is these courts in Michigan on their own are sort of taking on science and ruling that transgender women are not scientifically women, and then therefore translating that over into a civil rights platform on the basis of that. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
Yeah, more or less. Let me quote Zach, because this actually is a pretty good explanation and kind of clarifies it. And this is from Zach's piece on this. In other words, the court agreed with her perspective, this would be the person suing, that transgender women are not women and that she should never have been expected to understand that a locker room for women would include transgender women. By not disclosing that, okay, the club is taking the opposite position, respecting transgender people according to the gender identity, okay? Now, the relevant Michigan law here says this, and again, quoting Zach, Planet Fitness was, quote, failing to reveal a material fact in an attempt to mislead or deceive the customer, as the relevant Michigan law reads. Now, let me read that to you again. Planet Fitness was failing to reveal a material fact in an attempt to mislead or deceive the consumer, as the relevant Michigan law reads. This is where it's codified, and this is probably one of the largest problems that is faced by the trans community. It's the law doesn't recognize specifically gender identity. It recognizes biological identity, and the problem is, as you and I know, that's not applicable. This
right.
is an archaic interpretation of a reality, but it is also an archaic interpretation that is predicated on a ethos and a basis in law, okay, that falls in line with what the Christian supremacists have been pushing for a very long time. So this is religious fundamentalism that has been codified into law, and there hasn't been any changes made to it. So in other words, Michigan law is operating in the 3rd century BC while the rest of the planet has moved into the 21st century AD. That's kind of the bottom line.
Right. And the thing that really terrifies me about this is it is really demonstrating the threat that the Trump appointees across the whole judicial spectrum are posing, because he puts in these people who will make this determination, this is setting the dialogue and the rationale to them to move forward with transphobic rulings in other places. So the fight's begun.
It's that, and it's the other part of this too. And Brody, I'm sure, will be able to talk about this more when he hops on with us, because I'm fairly certain that this is one of the numerous ongoing things that he has to consider on a daily basis. Things that you and I take for granted, Brody can't. And it comes down to this one thing, and this is what, you know, Julie and I've had this conversation numerous times. It's what we call the it factor, the penis and vagina, testicle and ovary fight. It's the whole thing centered around an archaic interpretation of the state of human species. And these people have absolute callous disregard, because they come right back down to, if you have a penis, you're a guy. If you have a vagina, you're a woman, and that's just the way it's going to stay. And that's not true. You know, I've met and as you know, I have been a trans ally now for over 35 years, and I have met quite a few, both female to male, male to female, trans individuals. And, you know, one of the terms that I kind of, I bristle at is the word, you know, they can pass as. I find that insulting, and I'll have Brody talk about this because this is actually his fight, not mine so much, but it's something that I take umbrage at because I don't like the term passing. I don't think that a human being necessarily has to be forced to pass, and that includes from a very legal sense as well. And this is the real danger with these Christian supremacists and these, you know, conservative types, you know, from the Trump administration and then with these court appointees. And it is, you know, it is exactly what I keep saying. You know, I'm not going to back off this position. This is the worst of Christian supremacy. At some point, you know, someone's going to have to understand that there's a line in a battle that's, you know, being drawn here. And it gets down to one issue, and that is human rights. They are legally abrogating these folks' human rights. And that's probably where right. I take the big exception to it. And with that, let's talk to Brody.
No. Well, in a minute, because I have a few more comments. and Brody is online, so we will be bringing on him in just a second. But yeah, and to your point, I think it's not just who has a penis and who has a vagina, but it even goes as far as whoever had a penis and whoever had a vagina, because I don't think they even care if there's been, you know, the final surgeries. And to that point, I don't think that matters. I think that is, to your point of the umbrage of what is insulting to a human being, I don't think human beings should be asked what their genitalia is when they are identifying themselves. It's like, I don't get asked that. And I wouldn't feel comfortable every time I have a conversation with somebody having them ask me to describe my genitalia so that they could fully identify who it was that was speaking to them. And the one other point I want to mention, just to color this law case a little further, is the plaintiff there has been incredibly opportunistic, and she appeared in ads in Alaska, of all cases, on political campaigns to be anti-transgender. So this is not an injured party, you know, and some little personal thing. This is a vendetta, and we should treat it that way.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So, and now, taking control of the show, and now, without further ado, not that we don't have enough Brodies already, but we definitely want to add one more of great significance. Brody Ray, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, our pleasure.
Can you hear me all right?
I have to tell you, we can. You sound great. And you are in the business of sounding great, so that's a very
awesome.
Good thing. I just have to tell you, just within like the hour, I watched the video of your audition for America's Got Talent completely
cool.
Reduced me to tears. That was
aww.
So beautiful. And just
thank
for
you.
Those who haven't seen it yet, and I want them to go check it out, it's on YouTube. You came out, and I watched Julia Scotti on America's Got Talent. She was a little more surprising because they didn't seem prepared for her news that she was transgender. Yours seemed a little more organized, that you were prepared, and the judges, at least Howie Mandel, seemed prepared to introduce you that way. Is that the case?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it felt that way to me as well. So I think when it came down to getting it out there, I think it was their main priority. I don't know what their pages looked like in front of them, but I'm guessing that was probably the headline. And so obviously Howie was pulling it out of me from every direction he could. But yeah, definitely. I agree.
Well, Mel B seemed sincerely surprised. Like she was not prepared or had not been prepped on that.
Yeah, I mean, she acted pretty surprised, but I think that maybe it was more for the fact that she wanted people to know that, okay, this is something that she supports and that she is, you know, accepting of, and she wanted to share, you know, her, like, overwhelming support of it, you know? She wanted people to know that, hey, like, good for you, you know? She kept saying that, good for you. And she gets it, you know, and she retweeted it later on. She goes, you know, visibility is very important. You know, this is important. And she retweeted my episode. And she's a pretty cool person.
Yeah. Well, your song was so beautiful. And that is what made me cry, actually, was the song was so personal. Your voice is just incredible.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing that with all of us. what was the thought process in picking that song for that audition?
The song?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? I think for me it was I had to impress the judges, so I had to sing a song that really showcased not my singing ability, not just my singing ability, but, you know, the story that went along with it, and, you know, represents not just what I can do, but who I am and how I feel, and also maybe connect with some other viewers that were tuning in, because I feel like people in my situation, we all have a few things in common that we can kind of connect with and relate to with each other, and that song it was just a perfect song for that situation. And I kept coming back to it. I went through every single song I'd ever heard in my life for over like 3 months worth of like just like trying to find a song. And then finally I found one, and I played it back and forth, and I'm like, you know, this is really too high for my vocal range. So I dropped it down about three whole steps, and I was able to find an acoustic version of it and, you know, really make it my own. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, it was absolutely beautiful.
I would have to echo that. A few years ago, Brody, I had the extreme pleasure of meeting a couple of young kids from the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, Aaron Andrews and Katie Hill. And they were members of the Donald McNeil Transgender Project in the LGBT Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that's run by my good friend Toby Jenkins. Now, Aaron, they both wrote books. Aaron's title of his book was just, you know, it to this day cracks me up, Some Assembly Required. And when I interviewed Aaron, that was my initial reaction there. But now here's a kid who liked mudwomping in his F-150, okay, stone fishing, flying, you know, climbing these huge, fellacious mountains, you know, getting in the boats, and everything's like full throttle with them. And he's got a real love of country and Western music. And, you know, growing up in that part of Oklahoma, Broken Arrow in the area around Tulsa, and then, you know, when I found out that you were from that part of Nebraska, you know, the first thought I had was here's a kindred soul to Aaron. You know, talk to me about growing up and the influences that actually crafted, you know, not only your musical background, but you as a person, because I think in many ways, that the environment that produces, especially for a musician, all of the things, because they're telling stories, only they're doing it in music. So take us to Nebraska,
right,
and let's talk about Nebraska.
Well, you know, I grew up my whole life. I was there till I was 29 years old, you know, and my parents, we lived, you know, in several different houses growing up. We kept moving up to a bigger and bigger house, and the family got bigger, and I think I was 8 years old when I came out to my parents, and when I also got my first guitar and cello, and I started taking lessons right then. And my mom taught me my first guitar strum pattern. She would sing every song with us on the piano. And she can shred on the piano and on the accordion, and she's a great vocalist and big, great guitar player. So I definitely got that music ability from her. And she would sing us Dolly Parton. You know, we listened to everything, oldies, country, everything, rock. And so I think I got that. A lot of my influence comes from, you know, just a vast majority of an array of music that I was, like, listening to as growing up as a kid. And so I really took on, you know, I mean, growing up in the wrong body also kind of makes you a little confused and angry at the world as to why this God or creator or life chose you over everybody else. I think it makes you a little bit kind of angry. And so I kind of turned to music, kind of deal with that music and, you know, anything else that could kind of distract me from my reality of being trapped in the wrong body. So I was listening to a lot of punk rock, you know, crazy rock, metal, and like Blink-182, Dashboard Confessional, and everything else in between the used. And then, you know, growing up in Nebraska, it's a lot of country music, a lot of farm, corn. My mom has 11 siblings, so I have hundreds of first cousins on my mom's side. And so all I know is, you know, small town, dive bar, farmers, corn, country music. And I've really found a way to kind of incorporate the country into my rock and my pop music that I love so much, and balance everything that way. And it's really taking shape now as I get older, but I didn't really quite know what genre I was going to go into. But Nebraska really helped me kind of, you know, okay, maybe that country does need to be in there. And so it just comes out when I sing. It's just a natural thing.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Brody, Steve Grand, you know, is a gay country artist, or presumably gay. And
yes.
His music, his country songs are kind of unique in they are sung from a male perspective, cisgender male perspective, too often another man romantically. When you auditioned, Simon Cowell was very specific directing you. I mean, he was a big puppy dog, but he was very specific saying he hoped that you would write your own music, that he felt it was important that you put your voice out there, I think more than just your physical voice, but your conceptual voice out there. What do you foresee that voice being about in your music moving forward?
Well, I hope that I can – my ultimate goal is to have people appreciate the music and the talent for that just that, and not because of someone's gender identity or sexuality. I want someone to appreciate my music for what it is, not who it is. And I think going forward, it's going to be about, you know, writing the good music, the stuff that people want to hear, stuff that's on their radio, high-quality material, and really putting out, you know, good material for people and consumers to buy and to stream and whatever else it is. I think I got to stay focused on that right now as an artist because, you know, there's so many other things I could do with it. And, you know, advocating and speaking up and speaking out is also very important, but in order to have people take me seriously as an artist, I really got to hone in on that craft and make sure it's the best possible material that I'm putting out.
Well,
I think
it's beautiful.
I
noticed
that.
Good, Brady.
No, go ahead. I'm fine. I'm good. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say the one song I heard was very much sultry voice to a female love partner and very traditional country. And so that, and it sounds like that's the direction you're going in, that it would be, you know, love songs that are embraced,
I think it'll
by
be more love songs,
the general public.
Yeah, I think it'll be more of, you know, more of living your dreams, waking up and making your dreams become your reality, and loving the person who is in front of you and giving them your all, and just being open and honest, and just, you know, the real lyrics, not the beer drinking, bar hopping. I mean, yeah, that stuff's all fun and dandy. You can have a couple of those in there, but just maybe touch on some subjects that we haven't really touched on yet, you know, and maybe kind of reach different viewers and different listeners and kind of maybe change the scene a little bit, you know?
I've always thought, Brody, that music is kind of the rhythm of life. And it's you know, as a journalist, obviously I tell stories, but I think that in many ways, the first storytellers actually are musicians and folks like you. You're a member of the Nashville Songwriters Association, and you're in Nashville now. Walk me through the process of songwriting and pitching a song, because I know that you folks oftentimes write a lot of music for other people to perform. Going back to what you just said about touching on things with your songs, what are some of the most important qualities as you're constructing the lyrics and the music and putting it together to tell that story? What is your focus as you do it? Because I think that a lot of times people don't understand how musicians think. I know sometimes I don't. But I would like to kind of, you know, walk Rob and our audience and me through that, if you don't mind.
Well, for instance, I guess I kind of, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get your music to the masses and get it on the radio and get people to listen to it and get it heard and get it bought. And so my focus right now is making something that's lyrically catchy and something you can sing along to, something that's a little bit repetitive in the chorus. So I always try to make the chorus a little bit sweeter and shorter, a little bit more simpler to the listener, whether it's the lyrics or it's the way you sing it. I think that's probably my biggest struggle right now, is making it more simple, because I try to say too much in my lyrics, which kind of can be a turnoff to some people. If you find a shorter way to say something and sing it more catchy, seems to come off a little better. But I try to start with a melody that sounds good to the ear, which is, you got to find your right chord progression. So you take your song. Is it a love song? Is it a heartbreak song? Is it a I'm drinking beer song? Is it whatever it is? You got to find the melody that fits that. And if it doesn't feel right, you got to start over and strip everything away that you started with and start over, literally, maybe even sip on it tonight. Because once you get a melody stuck in your head for a certain lyric, it's hard to get it out. So sometimes I'll take a day or two, sleep on it, and start over. But the melody has to match the sound. And then if you want to add pop, I usually go to, if it wants to be a pop song, I'm going to go to a pop producer who's going to throw down what he thinks would sound good on it. If I want it to be more country, I'm going to go to my country producer and be like, hey, what do you think about this? Where could we go with this? It's all about kind of, you got to figure out what radio you want to be on, what listener you want to draw in. For me, lyrics kind of come easy. I try to relate. I try to make sure it's relatable, and it's almost easier to write about real life situations than to make something up. So the more life I live, the better songs that I can come up with. It's kind of silly to say that, but it's where I find my most inspiration. You know, whether it's dating somebody or going through a struggle, that's where I try to pull most of my lyrics from.
Okay, Brody, in the interview on America Got Talent, right before that, you showed kind of a clip, a video clip. You described how the path that got you to that stage had been challenging and a difficult one. Can you describe some of those hard times, and maybe what were some pinnacle hard times on that path?
Yeah, I think for me it was mainly coming out to my parents and getting my parents on board throughout the start of my coming out and through my transition, the medical surgical procedures portion, which is not only physically and mentally demanding, but it's very financially burdening on lots of people. But luckily for me, I was able to have my parents' financial support. My mother had her inheritance from her mother's farm and put all of that money down on my surgeries, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I went to Belgrade, Serbia for those. But within the transition, I started testosterone injections once a week, which deepened and lowered my voice and thickened my vocal cords. And then I completely lost my voice for a whole year. I could hardly even talk. It was like I had a bad cold and lost my voice. That's basically what it was. And I had to learn how to re-talk, and I had to learn how to sing again. Which I'm finally almost back to my full ability to sing and have complete control over my vocal cords. I think that was probably my biggest physical hurdle, was getting the surgeries and putting them behind me and vocally getting back to where I was when I started and getting better. It's a daily struggle. It's a daily process for me. I have to train my voice every day and stay up on it in order to keep, you know, moving forward with that. But within transitioning, there's a period where, like you guys were talking about earlier, passing and not passing. It's very it's a shitty thing that we have to deal with. But society, we're so male and female. We're so stuck on the image of those things, especially, you know, here. We got to have a label and an image for everything. And so the more passable, I guess you could say, using that word, the easier things get, which is, it's kind of sick and wrong, but it's the truth. And so once we start getting away from the whole male-looking, female-looking, and, you know, our standards for that, I think that it'll be easier for people to just live and let live. I think that was a really big struggle for me, was what bathroom can I use at this stage of my transition? What people can I be open with? Who can I date? Who can I not date? Just having so many boundaries. Will this producer like my music or like me as a trans artist, since I'm open? Will they shut me down? Will they close their door to me? Your anxiety builds up towards these little things, and it really creates a wall that you have to, like, climb over in your own mind. So I think those are the biggest struggles I've had, and I still have.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Go ahead, Brody.
What was that again?
That makes perfect sense to me. You just made a point that strikes my curiosity, because I have, over the years, dealt with producers and record label executives, and even Simon Cowell himself, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. I guess my question to you is, how tough is this? I mean, what's the probably the greatest part of opposition that you run into when you're presenting yourself? Because here's my thinking, Brody. You know, I look at you and, you know, you're the typical, you know, country pop singer, you know, with the flannel shirts and the pickup trucks and, you know, singing about the dead cows. Okay, well, that wasn't fair. But, I mean, it was the urban cowboy thing. But the thing of it is, in my mind, there's only one perception of you, okay? And, you know, my limit exposure to country artists and being around Memphis and Nashville. But how hard is it for you? I mean, you've got to deal with these folks, especially as a songwriter, more so than I think as a performer, but as a songwriter and as a person, you know, that's dealing with these label executives. I mean, tell us a little bit about what goes on with that, because that's got to be a horrendous pain in the neck.
Well, yeah, and it's a good question. And, you know, I could be biased to myself and say I'm a damn good singer. I'm a damn good songwriter. People should be taking over seriously, and they're not because I'm trans. I could say that, but then I could also talk to, you know, 100,000 other songwriters that are in Nashville that are not getting any traction as a heterosexual person. So is it me or is it the business? So I can't really say right now, but all I can say is I've worked with a couple producers. I've worked with songwriters. I've hired musicians. And there's a couple that will kind of, you know, you can kind of tell they're not too interested. And you're not going to be able to understand why, because they're not going to tell you, oh, I'm not going to work with you because you're trans. No, they're not going to say that. They're going to just kind of be like, yeah, I'd love to work with you. And then you never hear from them again, like everybody else. But there's been guitar players and producers and other artists and songwriters that are like, oh, that doesn't matter to me. I'm totally cool with that. Doesn't matter. I'm here to play and perform, make money. It's not about that. And so I've kind of had a 50-50 kind of perspective on things. I'm not sure if the people turning me down are turning me down for a reason that I think they are. So I can't say. I really can't say, you know, if it's because of this or that. I guess only time will tell now that it's out in the open with AGT. But I guess that'll be my defining moment, you know, see if people are going to take me seriously as an artist. And I'm kind of, you know, not really care so much as with the trans thing.
Well, it would seem to me that the final arbitrator would be the public, wouldn't it? It just is a follow-up to that, really. I mean,
yeah.
Well, it seems to me that the final arbitrator, really, at the end of the day, is the listening public. I mean, that would transcend, I would guess, that particular issue that you just outlined, would it not?
True, yeah. Yeah, and okay, it comes down to what people are wanting to hear and if they're going to buy it and if it's good stuff. And, you know, the rest can all, you know, fall to the wayside, if, you know, if you're asking me.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
Brody, so much in the public seems to be driven by an underlying mood of misogyny, I mean, including homophobia, which seems to be an offshoot of that, of men acting or being effeminate, which goes back to that misogynistic bias in a patriarchal society. Do you feel that trans men have a leg up, if pardon the expression, over trans women in terms of discrimination? For example, in the bathroom issue, the dialogue about that and the narrative seems to be very much fear-mongering around trans women in bathrooms, and often trans men portrayed going into a women's room seems somewhat absurd.
Here's my standpoint on that. I think it comes down to what we're visual people, and so when we think of men, we think of muscles, broad shoulders, beard, deep voice. When it comes to transitioning, and women, you know, vice versa, the boobs, the breasts, the skinny, wide hips, whatever, you know, what makes up a woman. So here we are, we've got a face to the label, and so here we are trying to switch that around, and you have a trans person who's transitioning from this gender to that gender. And when it comes to female to male, there's certain characteristics that transition better than when you transition from female or male to female. Because as a man, you have testosterone, you have facial hair, you have broader shoulders, you have thinner hips. And then when you try to take the body that you were given and transition that to the other body, it doesn't really come across as the other gender as well as if you were to throw on a beard and throw on muscles and broaden the shoulders with the muscles and, you know, the body fat distribution from the hormones. It just seems that it's less noticeable in female to males than it is for males to females. And so as visual human beings, we're seeing these masculine, broad-shouldered, like no hips, woman walk into the bathroom, and we automatically, our minds go to, that's a male body. But for a female to male, oh, that guy is a little shorter, but he's got a beard, so he's a dude, you know? So it's just our perspective on the gender and the sexuality, and like it's just based on the person and what they're seeing and what they're thinking. Because you could have a female who is born biologically female look very masculine, and you could have the exact opposite, you know? So it's all about people's like views and how they're seeing you. And it's just, we need to get away from that. We need to get away from, you know, what's masculine, what's feminine, what's passable, what's not passable. We need to get away from that and our labels, and then we can start just having people be people and having bathrooms be bathrooms, you know?
Right, right. What I'm going to ask you a really pointed question on this. What does it feel for you personally to be dictated to in terms of using a restroom that isn't how you identify? How do you personally feel when that threat is put in front of you?
Well, you know, growing up, it was a threat. Right now, like as I had transitioned and I, you know, I look the part, it's not threatening to me and it's never been an issue. But before, it was, I would have anxiety, like, oh my God, I have to go into that bathroom. Oh my God, I have to go and look like this person in that bathroom, and those people are going to know, or those people are not going to know, and which one do I go into? And it was an anxiety where I would literally go out of my way to not use a public bathroom. I would go out of my way to make sure I had a backup plan, or somewhere else, like go outside, or hang my head, or sneak in and sneak out. You know, it built up this anxiety inside my body and my heart and my mind that I carry with me throughout my life and through everything I do. It affects me mentally and physically. And, you know, that's where most of my anxiety lies, is are they going to accept me? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to physically be okay? And I think that's something that will always be with me, you know? Who's going to know?
Yeah,
who's going to find out, you know?
Yeah.
Am I going to get beat up? Am I going to live? Am I going to live today, or am I going to die? You know, like that's where your brain goes.
Yeah, that I appreciate your answer so deeply, because that, I think people need to hear that. I think they need to hear what you experience in that, where it's, you know, the superficial rhetoric that is expressed over this issue is so insensitive to what essentially trauma it puts on the people who are really involved, who have to live it on a day-to-day basis. So,
and, you know,
yeah,
nobody else would ever have to feel like that unless you were going into war. So it's like a day-to-day person feeling like every time they have to use the bathroom, they're going into a war zone. Are they going to come out alive or not? And so you're taking this like U.S. Marine and comparing this to like a person that might be transgendered, and they're having the same kind of anxiety, you know? It's PTSD is what it is.
Yeah. I think
that's a tough one. I mean, it's actually at the very heart of the argument that's ongoing right now with the trans military ban, Brody, that you just literally hit the nail on the head. As a matter of fact, right there, stationed in Las Vegas, not too far from you, is an Air Force tech sergeant, Sergeant Ireland, and he's trans. And I personally would not want to tangle with him if I was, you know, the enemy in a very dark place.
Exactly. Yes.
Sergeant
exactly.
Ireland is a member of the of an elite Air Force unit, and I just can't see anybody messing with him.
I've gotten to chat with him a couple of times. Kukai.
Oh, well, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. He's a good guy. I really like the sergeant. Yeah, and a quick aside, you and I obviously share the same first name. It's actually an Irish name, and it translates out of Gaelic to brother. So I find that interesting that we have that shared thing, being brothers.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Carney. So next Friday, August 17, or Friday, August 17, rather, not next Friday, you're going home.
Yeah.
And you're going to do a musical video. And at 8 p.m.,
yeah.
And everybody's going to get to come and see it. You're going to be at
Cunningham's
Journal, which is a tap and kitchen there in Kearney. And I've actually been there. I love that place. So
that
let's
place
talk about
is
what you're gonna...
so awesome.
It's amazing. I love it. You know, it's one of the fun parts of being a journalist is you get to travel around, especially during election years, for presidential races, and you get to see all these cool things. And I got news for you. We did a stop on in the 2008 campaign there, and I fell in love with the place. And I just was like, oh, cool. So talk to us about this. This is a homecoming show. This is a pretty big deal for you. What's going to happen?
Yeah, it's a good deal. It's my first live performance after being on America's Got Talent and, after representing Kearney, Nebraska and the Nebraska Cornhuskers, giving them a big shout out on stage in front of all of the world, And so I think it's going to be a big turnout. I think there's going to be a limited seating. It's going to be outside in the courtyard area, weather permitting. And if not, we're going to move inside. But, it's going to be a good hometown country rock pop feel. I'm going to be solo. So I'm gonna have some tracks. I'm gonna have my acoustic guitar with me. It's gonna be very intimate. I'm gonna have lots of merchandise there. We're gonna have Steelers screen printing with Brody Ray, new Brody Ray apparel, the new shirts, and we're gonna have the koozies, the posters, the guitar picks, everything that you can think of, Brody Ray stamped on it. It's free. It's open to the public. It's open to all ages. It's before bar hours, so anybody in their family, whole family, can come. So it's going to be a really big event. It's going to be really fun.
Well, that's
Brody, how?
I was going to add to our listeners in North Platte and our listeners in Omaha and our listeners in Scottsbluff and Lincoln, please go see this very talented young man perform at Cunningham Journal. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, it's gonna be an
hour-long
show, so don't miss it. Get there early, claim your spot. There's no very limited seating, standing room.
So
and I'm
going to
be hanging out afterwards,
sign in,
and taking pictures and partying. So
very cool. I was actually going to ask kind of the broader question about. How comfortable is Nebraska for you? Are you getting a lot of support?
Well, at first, it wasn't a very welcoming, understanding, open-armed place, but I feel like I can take a portion of the credit to say that Kearney is a better place because people are open and honest about who they are and they're out in the community and they're not scared. And I think that I've opened some doors for people's maybe to understand more deeply on a more emotional and physical level than ever before, than maybe they were ever wanting to be open with. I think it was kind of really, I pushed it on them because it needed to be pushed onto them, sometimes if it's in your face, it's in your face and you gotta look at it, you gotta face it, you gotta deal with it. And I was there and I was very, very there. And I was very open and honest and I was not scared, I wasn't scared to tell them how it was. And I said it in a way that people could understand it. And I helped people, kind of get it. And so now there's drag shows at downtown Kearney, Nebraska. There's drag shows at JD's, I just saw footage of it like an hour ago on my sister's phone. And it's just in the exact same bar that I've been harassed in, there's so much change in such a short amount of time. And I just feel so good about it.
I think that's absolutely fantastic, and it falls in line with my personal I want to say experience relationships with so many of my transgender friends, where I find, and almost to a person, I find them heroic and inspiring for me as a cisgender person, because even though I'm not on any kind of self actualization path, I still have one. I still have a path of finding out who I am and expressing that. And when I see somebody who fights as hard as my transgender friends have to be themselves in a society that has oftentimes pushed back very hard in the opposite direction, I find that inspiring. What do you hope cisgender people learn from you and your experience?
I think my main thing is that to not live in the bubble that society puts you in. Whether it be your gender or your sexual orientation, your sexuality, your identity, I feel whether it's with like your music or your artwork or your job or whatever it is, don't let the society tell you what you can and can't do. You are in control of your own destiny and your own dreams and making them come true. And that's my main goal, is to tell people to live fearlessly and relentlessly and give it your all, no matter what situation you're placed in.
That's brilliant advice. I would ask one question then. You know, Brody, somewhere out there in our listenership is a young trans guy or a young trans gal. What advice would you give them? Because they're just starting on the path. What's the best piece of advice you can give them?
I would say educate yourself first, and then find a way to educate your family and your friends in a way that they can understand it. Break it down into the science so they can see it. And when you can see it, when people can see it on paper or they can see it on a person, they're more likely to believe it. So if we can't see it, we're not very open-minded to believing it, which, you know, can go into the whole religious thing as well. But when someone can actually see it and feel it, I think that makes more of an impact. And just be 100% your authentic self. And don't question yourself. Go 100% into that, knowing that these people are watching you and they want to trust you and they want to know that you're serious about it. And you've got to go in 100%. You can't be flaky about it, maybe this or that. And if you are, maybe just be open and honest about that. Be like, hey, I don't feel completely this way or that way. I feel kind of in the middle. You have to be just 120% honest with the people that are around you and that love you, because you got to get them to understand what you're feeling inside. And that's the only way to get people to help you and support you.
Perfect. Thanks. Brody, I've got to say thank you. We are out of time. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Brody Levesque, thank you for your expertise and all that you do. I want to thank our listeners. You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio. We will be back next week, same bat channel, same bat time. And also listen to Out in Santa Cruz, Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern time. And you can hear that on www.ksco.com, live stream at that point. And that, again, is a live show Saturday night. Levesque and team, thank you so much. And we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!